Well, all right. Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression Voices. I'm your host, John Larson. I'm here in the fabulous studio with a good friend. We met several years ago. You and your buddies came down to the old studio Fist in Your Face in Lehi, and you gave us Chuck Burrow's book.
Yes.
It's the none other than the new host of Mormon Expression, Adam Archer.
Hello, John. Hello, everyone.
Hello and welcome. And sitting at his left is Corey. Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Now, how are you related to this guy?
I've been married to this guy for almost 12 years now. It's been rough.
12 years. That's a long time. And you guys have kids?
We do. We have a few. We have four children.
Four. Wow. What's their age range?
The oldest is 14 and a half, and the youngest is 6.
Wow. Congratulations. Holy smokes. Yeah, I'm glad my kids are growing up, and I have a calendar that I count down. I love the little shit, but I have a calendar that counts down to the time that they go away.
Yeah, we have that.
And they're going to live in the dorms, and this is already – I've already paid for, already done. I love them, and I'll love them even more from a distance.
I don't think there's anything – at least that I've experienced, this more polarizing than parenting. I mean, on the one hand, I find myself looking at my children and just wishing that it would last forever. And then 10 seconds later, I'm thinking that exact thing. When are you going to be out of my life?
This not life, true. But your
just,
house.
Just out of my home and out of my daily life.
There you go.
They're fun. So I must say, because people are listening, they're not watching – just to make it as awkward as possible, you guys are both a very attractive couple.
Thank you.
This was a consideration.
Stop it, John.
When I had to get a new host, I thought, well, maybe we can go in a different direction and find somebody who's a little bit more physically appealing, so you can bring more of the younger crowd.
Full disclosure, and John may not cop to this, but when I sent in my tryout material, I don't even know if he looked at these, but I sent a few additional pics, some of me without my shirt on, so that may have tipped the scales.
Oh yeah, I did look. So I'm pleased. It wasn't easy to get in and spend a lot of time thinking about it and puzzling over it. You almost got disqualified in the beginning. I've never told you this.
No.
You almost got disqualified because everybody who sent me a letter of interest or whatever, they immediately got the same response, which is send me a 10-minute demo tape, whatever you want. That was the entire instruction.
Yeah.
And you sent me a 20-minute tape. I will
Adam
also admit
like
I only listened to the first 6 minutes of it. So I don't know if there was something magical on the end there. I don't know about it. So, well, congratulations.
And thank you.
We are releasing this in conjunction with your first podcast so that those who want to get to know you a little bit better can come over here to Voices and hear your story a little bit.
Very good.
Is that exciting?
So exciting.
Now's your chance. Now, you know, all those kids in high school, now's your chance to show them that you're better than they are. You're famous, right? You're on Mormon Expression Voices. We don't just hand this shit out to anybody. Well, we kind of do. But welcome.
Thank you.
So, let's go back to the beginning, and I want to hear how you guys met.
So,
I mean, you've moved to different wards. You have this canned, right? This is a talk you've given many times.
We've given it 3 times because we've been in 3 wards married.
We have a pretty awesome getting together story, yeah, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of our story as a couple and our journey, our spiritual and religious journey. I actually met Corey on my mission as a missionary, and she was not a member of the church, and she was in the United States Air Force at the time.
So where were you?
It was in Aviano, Italy. So let Corey, you go ahead and tell your story. What led you to the Air Force? Why would you find yourself as a 21-year-old in Aviano, Italy?
Well, my dad was in the Navy for 30 years, and he always told me if I was going to join the military, to join the Air Force. And full disclosure, I had a 8-month-old when I joined the military. I had him a year to the day after I graduated high school. So I didn't have a lot going on for me at the time. I was working two jobs and I knew that the military would give me medical benefits and a firm, solid, base, I guess. And so I joined the military. That was the appeal, was stability. That was the word I was looking for. No, my, a guy that I worked with, he said, come to church with me. And I said, okay. And I went and found out he was Mormon and was like, oh my goodness. And I didn't speak to him for like 2 weeks. Then I went to, I think it was an Easter party and it was fun. It was just really, I had no community around me at the time. I was a single parent and all my friends were single and most of the wives of my friends that I worked with didn't like me. I was the only woman in my entire building and I was very young. So the wives didn't really warm to me very, very well. So I didn't have a lot of friends that weren't single. And so it just, it was a great community for me. It was people surrounded me and lifted me up and helped me. And they were just a family for me and my son when we needed it. Oh, absolutely. Oh, I didn't really care about the story at all. Really could not care.
So in hindsight, this is absolutely the truth because I only had about 9 months left in my mission when I met Corey. And it was actually, I got transferred to this American base and it's called Pordenone, Italy. And there's an Italian branch there and an American branch. And it was the 4th of July. So we went to a big 4th of July party. It was the day that I got there, hopped on our bikes and my new companion. We rode out to this party and this is true story, but I walk into the room and, you know, obviously I didn't tell her this at the time and it was long after we were married, but I walk into this room and I see her across the room. I don't know if she's married. I don't know if she's even of age. I don't know anything about this woman. And in my mind, I said, I'm going to marry her. And just one of those serendipitous things, which was totally nuts, because like I said, hadn't even met her yet. And turns out she wasn't a member of the church, wasn't hearing the discussions yet, but 3 weeks after hearing the discussions, she was baptized.
Yeah, right? Exactly. The best part was the member said, oh, you've got to, you know, I said, I want to do this. I'm interested. This is feels nice. To have all these people care about me. And they said, we need to take the discussions. So you have to go talk to the missionaries. Well, Adam was the first missionary I saw. And I'm like, hey, so I've got to take these discussion thingies. And he goes, I'm sorry. I'm really busy. I don't have time. And turned around and walked away. And then went, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it was.
Cause clearly in Italy, we were just
slammed.
Just investigators coming out of our ears.
Yeah. So that's Adam's witty sarcasm for you.
So I might have put my sound level too low and edited my own question out, but that's all right. Hey, I'm not an expert in this stuff. So you guys, you start writing, you go home from your mission, right?
Yeah. I mean, even before that, the war had just kicked off, the Iraq war, and Corey was deployed to Kuwait, which was kind of like a reserve station, if you will. It was kind of like a training depot and like a refilling station. And I mean, it wasn't in the heart of the war.
Right.
But she was there for 6 months, honey?
Oh, 4 months.
So 4 months. And like she said, she had a child at the time, our son Tyler. Mm-hmm. And there was this family in the ward. I mean, so gregarious and so magnanimous of this family. They took care of Tyler, our son, the whole time that she was gone. And since she was one of our investigators who got baptized, we wrote while she was away, and you know, it was under the guise of making sure that our investigator stayed strong while she was out in Kuwait. But clearly we had feelings for each other at the time. But really, I mean, other than that, it's, you know, full transparency and we're not ashamed. We're married 12 years now. I mean, really no impropriety at all in the mission field. We touched feet once, under a table. Other than that, nothing. No hugs, no kisses, no hanky panky whatsoever.
I'm sorry. All right. So fast forward through all the Mormon bullshit. At some point, one of you or you start having faith issues, apparently. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So it was, just very, very typical. Once we got married, it was just very typical. We lived in Italy for another year, had an awesome branch, tons of friends, moved to Texas because that's normal in the military. You get transferred around.
Oh, so you stay active duty even after you're married.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Corey was the breadwinner and that was awesome. Not going to lie. I loved every second of it. I started working in construction when we were in Texas and that was great because I really fell in love with that. But then we got pregnant with our third child and it was right in the heart of the war. And luckily as a female, Corey had the option of staying in or being discharged at that time. And that's, I mean, thank God for that in the military, but we chose the discharge because heaven forbid I'm home with three children with their mother gone to war.
I only had like 3 months left after my pregnancy.
Yeah,
anyways.
She was almost done, but we were able to get out early and then we moved back to Utah and I was too...
Back. You grew up here.
I should preface that. I grew up here. I'm from the Cottonwood Heights and Sandy area. I went to Brighton High School and since Corey, like she said, her father was in the Navy, did 30 years in the Navy, she's been all over the place.
Right.
And just doesn't really have a foundation where she calls home, if you will. So she was more than happy or at least willing to come back to where I'm from. And we settled in Layton for 2 years and then we moved to Sandy. And it was in Sandy where I finished my degree, went to 4 years of night school, cause we already had we had three children and then we had another one on the way when I was right in the middle of it. Got my degree in philosophy and construction management, a weird combination. But like I said, I fell in love with construction in Texas, but I found that philosophy was the thing that kept me going to school. If I had to go to night school for 4 years and miss out on my family and just having to go straight from full-time work to school, it had to be something that I was at least remotely interested in. And it was the philosophy degree that in the end was probably the nail in the coffin. I was writing my final paper, my senior paper, and it was a 25-page paper. And I was writing it on best source of truth, if you will. Is it either reason or is it revelation? So as the listeners can probably presuppose, I was going down the revelation line as an active Mormon, and I got almost done with the paper, and through all of my research, I was reading books by Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, and I read the Encyclopedia of Cults, and I was just enjoying the reading so much that rather than just focus on a couple pages or two, I found myself reading the entire book. And when I got to the end of the paper, I realized I don't believe anything that I just said, not a word of it. And I had to rewrite the entire paper, submitted it, did fine, graduated, but I knew I was cooked.
It's funny dabbling in philosophy. When I was an undergraduate at BYU, it was the early days of the internet. I used to sneak on what was called the undernet at the time, which is just discussion boards, and pretend to be a rational atheist because it was so simple.
Yeah.
Like having to construct these big complicated constructions to make your faith work. It was just such a relief to just pretend.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think, when that happened, there's so many layers of complexity. We were just married only 6 to 7 years, probably 7 years. We had four children and I was the one that taught Corey the discussions and she didn't get baptized for me, but I was a piece of that. And maybe she would have joined the church at some later date. I don't know. I can't say, but I was a part of that. So that put tremendous pressure on me as the father of our family and as her husband to not disappoint her and not completely tear the rug out from under her feet, so to speak. So that went on after writing that paper. It went on for a whole year where we were talking without substance and doing a lot of not talking. And it wasn't malicious not talking. It was just a lot of empty space.
You mean, just in relationship to the church or did it bleed over into your relationship in general?
What do you think, hon?
Well, I knew something was wrong. So yeah, I mean, every part of your life kind of bleeds together when you're married and when with relationships. I think it all bleeds together. So I knew something was wrong.
Where are you at this day? So you say you kind of joined the church for social reasons. Obviously, there was an ulterior.
He's not very attractive.
Motive. So after you've been in the church for 6 or 7 years, had any of it start to stick?
For me, it was all about the relationships. When I bore my testimony, it was to say how thankful I was for the relationships. And I didn't have a lot of friends for a long time. It was before the internet, before you had to like actually write a letter to a person. So like I wasn't going to do that. So it was I was still friends with these people and that we met in Italy. But in Sandy, it wasn't as, you didn't rely on each other because everyone has lived here their whole lives. They have sisters, they have their moms, they have their family here. So people weren't as a tight-knit of a community as they were in Layton and in Italy and in Texas. I got sick of going. I got sick. By Saturday night, I was mad because I knew I had to look my best on a Sunday because that's kind of just the way I believed in it, I guess. So every Sunday morning, I was up getting all the kids ready because he worked full time. I wasn't going to ask him to get up and help me get them dressed. So I have to get myself dressed, the kids dressed. We get to church. They're all climbing all over me because I'm the one that's always there and they all want to sit with me. He's falling asleep at the end of the pew. And then, and then I finally would have had enough with the kids and I'll wake him up. And so he'll take one to help me, but then they started crying. So then he would have to take him out, and then I'd get home from church Sunday and I'm mad that my weekend's over.
Right.
So it was just this, I was done, but I didn't recognize it for what it was until he mentioned it.
Yeah. So like in hindsight, it's so funny. And we talk about this with people that we meet and maybe people that are struggling. In hindsight, we went probably a solid year of not talking. And when I say not talking, sure, we talked on the surface, but to really express what we were feeling and to trust the other person that it would be received well. And that's through all of this and through all of the pain that we have experienced and all the relationships that we have lost, I can't say enough how truly grateful and how lucky I feel to have married Corey and married the person that I did marry, because that year was so painful, just worrying day in and day out. I may lose everything. And not worrying about myself in a personal level, poor Adam, but I've got children and I've got this beautiful wife who cares about me. And I risk losing all of this because she may not be okay with this if I talk to her. And to her credit, we did. She just grabbed me and said, I know something's going on. I know you're struggling. I need you to talk to me right now. Sat me down on the couch in the living room, and I just let it all go for about 2 hours. And God bless my beautiful wife. She just looks me in the face and says, and just smiles, kind of chuckles a little bit, and says, do you know that for the last year I've been feeling this exact same way, and we have not been talking about this? And that was it. And she basically just said, I followed you here, and I'm going to follow you wherever you go because I love you and I don't love this church. I love you.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because there are people who talk about on a Tuesday they had a testimony and then they saw a news report on Prop 8 and by Thursday they were slamming Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
That wasn't me. And I had the same sort of circumstance and luckily I had a good companion at the time that I could talk with. But there was a lot of stuff going on internally that I didn't fully understand. You know, and you say, well, why didn't we just talk to one another? But sometimes because you can't even verbalize it yourself.
Correct.
You don't even understand what's going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And unfortunately, you know, because I'm, where do you go? You know, here's Mormon expression, but we're about deconstructing or doing the faith.
Sure.
And it's really tough because there's no one to talk to, right? Because you're confused yourself. And it just shows that even though you guys are so intimate, you didn't feel comfortable having that conversation.
Yeah. And you know, the Mormon expression, I think I've talked to you about this before, John, and I mentioned this to other people, but your podcast it's been so critical for me in sitting at work or sitting in my car. And even before ever meeting you, just having a dialogue with my own mind. And feeling like I'm participating in the conversation that you're having with yourself or with a panel. Because before you have that outlet and before you have that person you can go and talk to, who in the world are you supposed to talk to? It's extremely painful.
Yeah, I mean, you go talk to a bishop and they'll tell you to read the scripture and they don't even know. On honest ones, you know, I said a couple weeks ago, I always had good relationships with my bishops.
Yeah.
And the bishop in the last ward that I went to, he did just shrug his shoulders.
Yeah.
And just say, you got to do what's best for you,
yeah,
man.
And that's not they don't mean that. They don't, and it's not a negative to them, but they're just usually not equipped to deal with what you're bringing to them.
Right.
In fairness to them.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. And it's a strain on relationships leaving the church. So
yeah,
congratulations for making it.
Thank you.
Notice I didn't say this far because I'm trying not to be cynical.
But
we say the same thing.
That's,
I mean,
the
reality. It's naive to think that it's always going to be there. I think that it's important for it to make sure that you don't think, well, we're always going to be together, because then you stop trying. And for me, that's what she found this out about me like a year or two ago. That I've never viewed our marriage as a permanent thing, just because that's my way of trying to keep it going, I guess.
Yeah.
Keep trying.
And you know, and I come from a home, my parents have been married, and I may get this wrong, but I think it's 37 years now, and Corey's parents were divorced. And so that was a foundation that was normal to her. And it's just never been a part of any of my lineage. My grandparents stayed married. And I think my grandmothers did not, but I think my paternal side, they did. So it goes back quite a bit.
Right.
That's a norm for me. But to hear that from my wife, that gave me, I appreciated that she shared that with me, because it gave me a whole new perspective that's just the default for me. But this isn't permanent, and it doesn't have to be permanent unless we choose for it to be permanent. That's the only thing that makes it permanent.
I think that's insightful. So you guys finally discover one another.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say about that is that I couldn't even put into words what I was feeling until he started talking about it, because the church was just our life. It never even occurred to me to stop going. It never crossed my mind that I wouldn't continue.
That it was an option. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. There was an option. This is just my life. Just like I have four kids. I'm stuck with them. And it's just part of my life. So for him to start talking to me, I was like, I had just never conceived that there was anything else for us. I think a lot of times you don't put it into words. And so then the dialogue is important.
You're all still members, like on records, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, I participated in the mass resignation. It was really Zilpha's thing, and I was happy to support her. But my attitude is more like, who cares?
Yeah. If I'm being honest, John, and I think Corey's much more ambivalent, because it's just, she reclaimed her power long before I did, that she doesn't defer to anyone any longer, and she's responsible for herself. Whereas I've definitely had much more work to do in reclaiming my voice and ceasing to defer to higher forms of power and authority. But now I'm definitely just much more ambivalent, and really just comes down to laziness. I mean, I've thought about it and then,
that's not true.
Well, really, but that would take, I've gone through the ups and downs of Corey. I'm doing it. I am doing it. I am resigning. But then when it comes down to physically doing it, that's a lot of effort for something that I just don't care about.
I've also asked you not to do it just because of the dynamic of our daughter's friends, our LDS in our neighborhood, some of them, and to make that stand, and she has a hard time making friends. So to make that stand, I worry for her relationships in our neighborhood.
The advice I generally give people privately, maybe I've said on the podcast, I can't remember what I've said, is, you know, you can still be part of the community. You don't have to alienate. Now, the problem is oftentimes you have to set good boundaries with people. And Mormons, when especially it comes to faith, have really poor boundaries, right? You know, like I'm moving in the next couple months, and I was thinking last week, actually, I'll confess that I was a little bit disappointed that I've lost my membership, because in a sense, the people are still my people, and to be able to participate, I've said, I went to my bishop, my last bishop, and said, I'll take a calling as long as not doctrinal. And they didn't give me one.
Yeah. And I, John, I think that is such a good point. 'Cause in fairness to our current neighborhood, as far as the boundaries thing goes, there have been a couple of times where, as parents, we could get really upset that someone said something to our child, but it's so petty on our part. It really is. Because the greater good, relationships for our children, relationships in our community, knowing our neighbors, having healthy relationships with them when we're just respectful and kind, that's so much more important than being right on one or two issues, or at least where we feel that we're right. But our current neighborhood, God bless them, they've just been so nice, so welcoming. People call us, people ask us to come over for dinner or snacks or go to a movie with them. And it's really nice. And it doesn't, I don't know if Corey feels this way, but it doesn't feel like there's an ulterior motive.
Is this the ward that you left in? Had you actually attended this ward?
No.
Okay,
the ward we left in.
That helps.
That's the key. I tell people, it's hard advice, but the number one thing, especially if you live anywhere in the Zion corridor, is you need to move.
Yeah.
And because they're going to accept you as an inactive or as a non-member. Correct. But if you have lived in a ward for 10 years and you leave, they're going to look at you as a turncoat.
The stark contrast of where we left. And I have great empathy for the people from our previous neighborhood. They were all very kind and loving and accepting when we were there. But it's just, it's a termination of a relationship. It's almost like we died and they just don't know how to deal with us. And so it was an additional 2 years living there in that neighborhood where all relationships were severed, just clean and cut.
It's the church's fault. I mean, the church has been for 170 mm-hmm. years pounding in that apostates are bad, that they want to sin, that they're flawed, all this stuff that they put out there.
Sure.
And members can't help but absorb some of that.
Yeah.
And oftentimes leaves them confused, just knowing not what to do. So they just terminate the relationship.
Absolutely.
We didn't really have any close friends. And I mean, there's a few, but we didn't really have a lot of close friends in that area because of what I was saying earlier, just that everyone's got their family and they don't feel the need to reach out to their neighbors.
In fairness to, and I want to make this perfectly clear, if anyone from our previous neighborhood is listening, we hold no ill will whatsoever towards anyone. And honestly, I bear personal responsibility because I can't remove myself from the equation and say it's everyone else's fault.
Right.
Were there things that I could have done to extend myself to other people? Absolutely there were. It's a difficult thing to deal with, and we don't have a lot of good tools on how to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
A fantastic point. So you all come together, and what happens next?
Come together after we left the church? Or?
No, where we last left off, you guys had – you come to each other and said, hey, well, we both – basically, we had this hard year. How long till you leave the church? What happened in your relationship
then? Almost immediately, we tried. We were like, for our kids, we're going to stay. I mean, we talked for hours that day and just said, we're going to keep going for our kids, for our community, until we figure out really what's going on. I mean, we couldn't. It was just to go sit there and listen at that time was really kind of difficult, I think.
Yeah, and Adam's final day went like this, and this was really my final day for at least, I mean, a year before I stepped back into a church. And I do not recommend this to anyone if you're still teeter-tottering. But I was the young men's advisor. There was a president. I think I was the first counselor probably. I taught 2 times per month, and it was the 12 and 13-year-olds. And it was just right on that cusp of cell phones being a thing that kids had as an accessory. So, you know, you had 1999 to 2004-ish where it was only an adult thing, and then all of a sudden it was a teenager thing, and it's just part of their hand now. And they can't sit through a meeting without playing Snake or texting or being on Facebook. And I look around the room and I'm struggling. I mean, I'm just cognitive dissonance coming out my ears. And so I'm really struggling to just go to church that day and convincingly, you know, talking about Elijah going on a chariot up into heaven. I mean, very difficult for me. And I look around at these boys and they are all on their phones and they are texting. This is not their fault, but this is just Adam could not take anymore. And I just closed up the book in the middle of my lesson and I said, boys, farewell. And I turned around and walked out of the room and did not go back for a year. And, you know, the ward came by. It was probably about 2 months and the bishopric came over and it was all 3 of them and loving guys, wonderful guys.
Did they internalize it? Did they all feel guilty? Did they have meetings with the bishop? What did we do to Adam?
I have no idea. And honestly, if they're listening, it's not the boys' fault. It's a sociological problem more than it was any of those boys' fault individually or collectively. But that's how it went down. And the bishopric comes over about 2 months later and So, Brother Archer, we're feeling like you're not coming back. Do you think we should just start? It was like that, the movie Summer School with Mark Harmon, where the big black guy leaves for the entire summer semester and comes back with the key to the bathroom and says that his zipper got stuck. You know, he never came back for the summer semester. That was like my departure from church.
So, oh, fantastic. So do you remember your last day?
No, I don't think so. Just the same old. There was never anybody in Relief Society, so I always sat by myself. My kids were little and they always pulled my hair, and I don't remember a specific last day, I don't think.
So y'all quit going to church. The first few weeks is just marvelous, right? Suddenly you have an extra day in the week.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where if you're like most people, you start missing, feeling like something's missing. When did you first feel, or did you feel any sort of pull to something else?
We went on a family history trip. Church history trip, excuse me.
Wow.
So this too is a true story, and I don't recommend that you do this either. But, Corey and I,
we didn't handle it well.
We were always together, and we were always united, and that was a wonderful thing. But we made a few missteps along the way, like everyone does. So my parents had planned a family history trip a year before. And it just so happened that it was in June. And it just so happened that we had decided to not go to church anymore 2 months before. So we're in this thing.
So this is a big extended family.
So big, it's everybody. It's all the adults. So we're going to New York first, to Manhattan. And we'd never been to Manhattan. It was fantastic. Went to Central Park and we went to Times Square and we just had a killer time. But my younger brother, and I'll be talking a lot about him on the podcast, and I'll even be having him on. We're the best of friends, and he's my younger brother by 7 years, but I look up to him in a lot of ways, just because of his character and the type of person that he is. But he had helped me out a lot in the past 2 years prior to that vacation. We had a lot of dialogue, and he helped me to process a lot of information. And we were in Times Square, and we were at the Tropical Sun Bar or something like that.
We hadn't told him yet.
We hadn't told anyone. We hadn't said a word. And he texted us and said, "Hey, I'm just over at this bar." And we said, "Yeah, we'll come over and meet you. We want to spend some time with you." So we sit down, and the bartender comes over, or the waitress, and she says, "What do you guys have?" And he's sitting there holding a Long Island. And I said, "What do you have?" And he says, "I have a Long Island." And I said, "I'll have what he has." And just eyes get as big as saucers, and he looks at us, you know.
Wait, that was your first drink?
That wasn't our first drink, but that was our first exposure to the family. And so we end up, true story, we're in Times Square. This started about 10. We end up over at an Irish pub, and we end up walking home at 4:30 in the morning through Times Square, me carrying him on my shoulder. We run into Batman.
True story.
Of course.
On the street, just a man dressed as Batman in this, you know, just lurking in the scaffolding, because there's always scaffolding. There's always stuff being built in Manhattan. Go home, sleep it off, and the next morning, my brother, unfortunately, is hungover. So my dear mother.
Do your parents know that your brother drinks?
Yes.
They know that he relatively drinks, that he's at college. Okay. He's young. He's experimenting a little. He's just barely turned 21. But they don't have enough exposure to it yet that they will know the telltale signs of someone that has drank the night before.
Right.
So we're in Manhattan, and my dear mother, she is so concerned.
Wait, in case my mom is listening, I'm never hungover. It's always the flu. Go on.
He has exactly that. My dear mother is concerned that he drank too much Mountain Dew the day before. And so we have a whole day planned out where we're going to go to Ground Zero.
Where we're going to Central Park that day.
We're going to Central Park. We're going to go and see all the sights, and it's going to be a total blast. But unfortunately, my brother, he's stuck in the room because we just had too good of a night the night before. So my mother keeps wanting to go back to the room to check on him. He's 21 years old. And this goes on all day until finally at 5 o'clock at night, she insists she's going home because she's going to go check on her baby. And I just say, "Mom, he has a hangover. Will you please stop it?" "Well, how do you know that, Adam?" "Because we were with him last night. Can we please just go on with the rest of the day?" That was the beginning of our trip, and we still had Palmyra to go through. Needless to say, it was a terribly awkward trip, and I mean, my poor parents. What an awful, awful thing to do to my parents.
Well, it was. I'll grant you that. But at the same time, you know, fundamentalist Mormons, they construct these impossible to win situations where they push the boundaries further and further and further. If you become an ex-Mormon, you will be an asshole at some point.
Yes.
Guaranteed. But that's because they've set the asshole trap so far out in camp that you can't, it's like the tin cans around a zombie camp. You can't help but hit them, you know, when you head towards the light. During the trip, do you ever have the talk about your faith and your belief, or
no,
is it?
So, you know,
it was a few months later. It was like 3 months later.
Yeah. At the time, my dad and I had just purchased a business together, and I'll go on the record saying this now, and I'll continue saying it throughout the podcast. My father is just my hero. I can't imagine having a better father. He's loving. He's respectful. He's kind. He's interested in me. He believes in me. He disagrees with me, but he keeps loving me, and he keeps talking to me and keeps those lines of communication open. And I just love and respect him so much for that. And my mother, I love and respect her in all those same ways. We just don't have that same relationship. And it's not her fault. It's just the dynamic between the two of us. But Dad could tell that clearly something happened on that trip, and clearly something had been going on. So he calls me into his office one day and just says, I want to hear it all. Just lay it all out there. And to his credit, he didn't do the typical dad thing where he said he wanted to hear and he went for 5 minutes, or I went for 5 minutes, and then he just slammed me for 2 hours. He listened to me for 2 or 3 hours, let me spill it all out, and he had no response at the end. He just let it be.
He sounds like a wonderful guy, but I do want to emphasize that I think this sort of experience that you describe, and I had a similar one, is actually more common.
Yeah.
I think that Mormons are better people than we as ex-Mormons.
Give them credit for.
Because we give voice to the people who have terrible experiences.
Yes.
And this is the point I was trying to make in the Why the Church Wasn't All Bad podcast, that I think church is full of absolutely wonderful people just trying to do the best they can in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it pleases me to hear that.
Well, his family, we've always been welcome. There has never been a moment when it was, well, you guys can't, you're not welcome because you're not going to church. They've always been very welcoming.
So no one ever blamed it on you. I mean, you were the bad influence, right?
I felt that sometimes.
You know too
but
well,
that's,
John.
Yeah. It's,
she's being nice.
I felt that, but it's hard for them not to. Well, if he had married a good Mormon girl, she would have kept him strong. Well
even outside of that. I mean, like, Zilpha's family blamed it on me. My family blamed it on her.
Sure.
It's just you're the outsider, right?
And his mom and I are still, we had a rough patch for a little while where we weren't besties, but we're still very close. I was talking to her on the way here. Like, we talk all the time. We love to shop together. So his family, we're very lucky with his family. His parents are very supportive.
Yeah. And I want to say if Corey's parents are listening too, to their credit, there was never any bad blood with her parents.
No.
I mean, it's always been status
quo.
Well,
they wouldn't care about you leaving
the church
at all. No,
wouldn't care at all. And
my dad was just glad he could drink wine at my house.
If anything, our relationship with her father for sure has improved in that regard, because he's a wine aficionado, and now he can come to our home, and there's no, in our home, Jay, we don't drink wine.
I like when you take the tone. You got it.
Oh, yeah. I got to get my Moses voice on. And I gotta be the patriarch of the home when he's coming around. He's gotta know who's boss.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you all leave the church. How do you start building community, friendships, networks outside of that?
So this is probably the, you know, outside of Corey, just being an absolute godsend for me. Cause I really do believe relationships that I ever had prior to going on a mission. I was a kid. I mean, so those don't really count. But I probably wouldn't have done very well with a hardline Mormon girl, because maybe I would have. Maybe they would have been understanding and empathetic and followed me. So that Corey was a godsend, and that was step one. But for me, I still needed a community of people to really hash this stuff out. Because since for Corey, it was more based on relationships, we could find those relationships. But for me, I still needed to break. I needed to deconstruct all of this in a safe place where this could all be discussed, and I don't have to worry about someone going and tell my parents or my employer or any of my close relationships. And I was at my 10-year high school reunion. And I just an acquaintance from my childhood. We went to junior high and high school together. Never close friends, but we just knew each other. We played on sports teams together. And we both were in student government in high school. We were there setting up for the 10-year reunion. And I said some comment, just some very direct comment about the priesthood. And it was condescending. But I was, you know, putting up streamers, not looking at anyone. And I said something. And this guy, he turns, and I'm not going to use his name, but he turns beelines and just comes straight over to me. And it was just 4 hours after setting up decorations. That was my first person where we sat in the parking lot, hashed it out for 4 hours, and it was clear.
You had both lost your faith.
It was match made in heaven. We were just struggling, at least at that point. I was probably right. A little further down the road, but he is brilliant, brilliant person. He's getting his PhD right now. And he was much more structured than I was about it, where he said, we need essentially to build a community. If we're going to survive this thing, and if we're going to be able to really work through this, we can't do it on our own, and we got to bring other people in to support us. So we created this, and I'll talk about this later on the podcast, but we created this community that we called Insight Group. And the only rule and stipulation to Insight Group, there's no membership, there's nothing like that, but it was the one and only rule was no ad hominem attacks. Do not attack the person. But Every concept, idea, belief, anything, any form of ideology, it's fair game, and hammer the shit out of it if you want to. And that was, as long as everybody was willing to abide by that one rule, we found just serendipitous relationships with people along the way. It was 5 years ago that we started this group, and our initial plan, it's the group of guys that I met you with, John.
Right.
But our initial plan in 2009 was just to try to meet once per month for an entire year. And we accomplished that goal, and we've been friends and, I mean, brothers and partners and confidants ever since. We go on trips still together, and we communicate daily via email. And all of these guys, for me, have been godsends and really have shaped the world that Corey and I live in today, that to help it and aid it to be a positive experience.
But do y'all still meet and discuss philosophical things, or is it more of a social club now?
It's
both. I would say both.
It's both. It's you know, it's
is it still a sausage fest? Because it seemed like there was a lot of
well,
a lot of dudes.
In the beginning, I think you were the only one that was married.
We were the only ones married, so it definitely was sausage fest in the beginning. And you know what? We tried in the beginning of Insight Group, we tried to incorporate women. But maybe we just weren't looking in the right places. But 5 years ago, those women and the women that were a part of the group, they just weren't ready for the conversation. When Adam, day one, said, when we had our first meeting, so when we talk about being open in this group and we talk about ideas being fair game, if Adam says, God does not exist, how comfortable is that fair game? And you could just see a few people in the room just squirm, and you could just see them just tighten up just with that one statement. And so it took time to weed out, and not in a malicious way, you're not worthy of this, but this just isn't for you. You're just not going to, you're not going to be comfortable in this space. And it just so happened that in the beginning, there weren't many women that were comfortable with that space.
Well, I don't, Adam is, and it's more good than bad, but Adam is brutally honest, and he's very open, and he will talk about anything with anyone. And we've had more friends come to our door needing someone to talk to because they can be honest with Adam, and they can ask him honest questions, and he will be open, and he's not afraid. You can ask him absolutely anything, and he will give you an honest answer. He will never, and if there's not an answer that he's willing to give, he'll tell you he's not. But I don't think I've ever found something that he's not willing to talk about.
I probably should develop that.
But sometimes, and sometimes that can be frustrating.
Yeah, as the recipient.
Yeah. Absolutely. That can, I'm trying to think of a specific example, but yeah.
So,
I can't.
I would say, you know, the second thing that we did though, John, so that was Corey. And then that group, but the second thing that we did was I had a childhood friend.
I'm glad you're talking.
My best friend from my childhood. His father and my father have been best friends, and three other men, since they were 12 years old. And they're now in their early 60s, and they've maintained that friendship for 50 years. It really is like a hallmark to humanity to just see people continue to work on a friendship and a relationship. And one of their sons, we were born a year and a day apart, and we were just best childhood friends. And Mormonism just obliterated that relationship for me.
Oh.
I became incredibly homophobic and bigoted. And clearly, I mean, at a very young age, he was homosexual. I mean, everyone's known it for a long time. And as he became an adult, he went down to BYU and he was discovered and he had his coming out experience. And now he lives as a proud, openly gay man. But we extended ourselves to open that relationship back up. And to their credit, the most beautiful, wonderful people. It was the shittiest, and I'm just getting chills as I'm talking about it. The shittiest thing you can do to someone that you love and care about is to shun them.
Mm.
When you truly did care about each other. You had a loving relationship that wasn't based at all on someone's sexual preference. It was not even a part of the equation. And what does it matter anyway? It's none of my business. It has nothing to do with me. So I tried to open that relationship, and they walked right through the door willingly.
Oh, wow. He just said, shut up. When are we going to hang out? Like, that was...
Came over to our home. We had dinner, and we've been close, loving friends ever since. We do things all the time. We vacation together. And that's another place where we found this huge community of people that have been more than willing to share their lives with us because they have been ostracized, and they know what that feels like. And that's been fantastic for us.
We have found closer, more meaningful friendships outside of...
In the abyss, if you will.
Yeah, outside of the LDS church than ever inside of it.
And some of that, I think, is not because LDS people are bad.
No.
But I remember that feeling of not being able to be genuine. Now, sometimes ex-Mormons overcorrect and they overshare, and you know they have boundaries that way. But just to be able to represent yourself, and that was one of the things for me sitting in church, knowing that politically I didn't agree with these folks, and that would have been fine, except they were fucking talking about it all the time.
Yes.
You know, and just to be able to kind of shed that and be genuine to yourself, I think it's common to start finding real.
Well, and that's exactly what it was that you could be your genuine self without worrying about someone judging you for it or not accepting you for it. And we've definitely found that in both of those groups.
Yeah.
You have this group, so you start engaging philosophically. I presume because of what you've said, you lose your faith in God.
Yes.
And I'm presuming that neither of you are religious today.
No.
What's taken the place of that element that was in your life? What?
You know, I can't speak for Corey, but I honestly, John, I don't think we have a substitute for that. And you know, I was at your last podcast, your farewell podcast, and I was feeling extremely emotional as you were speaking. I felt like it was so sincere and so genuine, and I felt like it was the exact sentiments of my heart that the church wasn't all bad, and that I do love hundreds and hundreds of people within the church, and I would love to continue fraternizing with them and having that community aspect. And we are on that holistic of a level, we are lacking that. That point you made about your kids not knowing anyone over 50. That's a truth. I mean, and it may just be a societal thing. It may be that on a societal level, we are becoming more exclusive, or we're shutting ourselves in more. I don't know, but that rings true for me with my children. I mean, I remember going around the neighborhood growing up, being a 10-year-old boy. I mean, when I was 12 years old, we were going around as deacons, and our deacons' quorum president, just this brilliant, I mean, he's a physician today, brilliant even at that age. And he came up with this plan to go around and visit the elderly in the ward. And we, as young men, we would just go around two or three at a time, and we would just knock on their door, and we, no plan, just go in and just hang out, just to talk to them. And I, the cat comes out of the bag with me, and I let one of them know as we're sitting there, well, we're here to visit the elderly. But that was, what a wonderful experience though. I mean, where else do you get that experience? It really is neat, and it shapes you.
Yeah. There's a generation, you know, I was, as a young kid in the 70s, you know, visiting people who, there were people I knew who had been born in the 19th century, you know?
Yeah.
And just that bridging of the gap. There's definitely elements of my life that I feel are missing that I had with the church. That doesn't compound for the fact that it's a bunch of bullshit, but yeah. It's hard.
I think the other thing that we have done that's to replace that is Corey and I are just both more open to experience that we may not have been open to before. And I'm not talking about going to ecstasy parties and throwing the keys in the bowl, but trying to just to spend more time, more focused time with our kids, getting memberships to the zoo and to the Natural History Museum and to go play at the park with our kids or to do a movie night, to go on vacations. We decided a few years ago and it doesn't always work out, but we tried. Just because everyone else is doing Christmas doesn't mean the Archers have to do Christmas. And yes, it's going to be hard, but what if we just do a vacation for Christmas? It's not to be condescending towards anyone else, but this is just a choice for us. We don't have to do what everyone else does. And so we take that money that we would spend on Christmas and we go on a 5-day Disney vacation, which is fantastic for our family. And it's this experience that we will always remember and cherish, versus not remembering 2 weeks later what we opened on Christmas Day. So it's been little things like that where we feel more empowered to do what we want to do with our lives rather than what we're told to do with our lives or what we're expected to do.
Well, and I think when you leave the church with children, it's actually harder with teaching your kids. You have to make more of an effort.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of Sunday, you know, for 3 hours, they're going to be given these like life lessons about truth and honesty and service and all these lessons that they learn in church that we don't have to do anything. Like they're getting that lesson at church and we just have to say, I agree. Where when you step away from the church, now you actually have to parent and you have to sit down with them and have those discussions yourself instead of relying on the church to do it. And the independent thought, that has been one of the biggest things that I've enjoyed about leaving is making decisions for myself that I just never thought about it when I was in the church. Like Christmas is Christmas and oh, everybody does it this way. So I can't do it differently. And now it's, well, what works for the Archers is what works for the Archers. And that's okay.
Well, we have a dear friend who she's an old soul. She was probably born spiritually in the 50s and 60s. She's Ella Fitzgerald and Sam Cooke, and she loves, you know, antique stores. And she introduced Corey to feminism, this girl that's much younger than us. And that's been an interesting journey for both of us because Corey started reading the books and I started reading the books with her. And that's really helped to give us a new perspective and a new – you were talking about the Castaway Crossroads last week, and it's just given us another road that we can go down should we choose. And, you know, prior to having a disassimilation of our cosmic beliefs, Corey had no intention of going to school, had no intention of ever educating herself, had no intention of ever working again. And that's been so, so gratifying for me, because I would love some help taking care of our family financially, but to watch her to blossom as a person and to have her own opinion and to have a solid opinion and to really think things out and to write things down even and create a thesis. And when is upset with me, for example, to really think about it and then write it out and pen it out and to go, wow. I'm proud of her. She's intelligent and she's becoming her own person, if you will, an adult who has her opinion, who is educated. And that all came from being introduced to just the simplest of feminist ideas. So that's really shaped our relationship and our family in ways. Corey's only, what are you away, honey? Three classes
away from getting my bachelor's.
Yeah.
What's your degree in?
English.
Wow. Fantastic.
I love it. It's fun.
What's your plan after that, or do you have one?
To get my master's. He's being very generous and continuing on doing what he's doing right now so that I can get my master's and teach high school, hopefully.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's a big deal.
Well, coming from someone who didn't think she was smart enough to even attend college, I think that's pretty awesome. I'm excited.
I'm worried that I hired the wrong Archer.
Oh no, he's much more charismatic.
So speaking of which, what led you to the doorstep of Mormon Express? Now, for people who don't know, you have been on several times, at least three or four.
Yeah. So I would say that it's that the same group of friends that I was talking about. They were just all really supportive of one another. We've done some crazy stuff together. We do all kinds of weird experiments, social experiments, and We've always just always loved your show and just admired you just for what you've done. Just to put yourself out there socially and to reap those ramifications, both positive and negative. And you outlined some of those last week, and I'm sure there's many more. But just not only that, but we admire you too, and we admire the show. We admire all of the shows, people that are willing to be transparent, that are willing to express their opinion, are willing to be wrong, are willing to admit that they're wrong. Those are admirable qualities in my book. So when you, I was sitting on the podcast with you on the panel one day, and you said you were giving up the ghost, if you will, and said, I'm giving up the chair and giving up the microphone. And at the time, I thought that's sad, and we'll miss you. And I'm sure we'll hear from John again, and he's going to go on and do good and great things. But, whoever that person is, I'm sure they'll be great too. But it was really that group of friends that they just came to me and said, Adam, you should do it. And I at first said, no, there's no way I'm the right person. I'm a nobody. I'm just a dad. I'm married. I go to this job that isn't incredibly fulfilling for me. I really am just a nobody. And it was through the encouragement of my friends and my wife who said, no, you may not believe in yourself, but we believe in you and you can do it. So I put myself out there.
Well, you have been on the philosophy podcast with me. Most recently 1984. Randy was generally responsible. Randy, my producer, was generally responsible for getting the panel, but I always asked for you after you had been on a few
times. Thank you.
So, I enjoyed your input. And it's hard to sit next. We were talking about we had dinner.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to sit next to me. I don't necessarily give a lot of space for others. Because you don't want dead air.
Yeah. And I honestly can't express this enough. I think I told a few people last week that, you know, the visitors that were here, because you don't know. You can watch this and you can see it happen live and you think, oh yeah, I could do that. You have finely tuned your skill at doing this and you know what you're doing. Sometimes you may just be shooting from the hip. You're so comfortable doing it. You've got it down. You got to come ready to hang with John Larson and to stay with you, because what you're doing, it is a science. If you just lob things over the table and somebody doesn't respond, that's dead air. And you're right. I mean, this is sports radio. This is talk radio. 3 to 5 seconds of dead air space. That's not listenable. It's not entertaining. And the 3 times that I came on with you, there was no notes. There was no, this is what we'll be covering. You just got to come ready to go. And it is intimidating, but it was a thrilling experience though, too.
It's fun, no?
I mean, my personality, I had an absolute blast. And that, I wouldn't have been willing to come back the second time if I had a horrifying experience. But the reason I bring it up is to all those people who may have hard feelings towards you and think that you didn't give them a fair shot, please don't take it personal. This is just the nature of how this thing works. You just got to come ready to go. And sometimes you just may not feel comfortable or even be ready to talk about the topic that's being discussed.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of course, the panelists after. I don't think there's tons of people who've been on who feel really bad, like they got bulldozed over by me.
I hope not.
But I think a lot of them express what you said is it's a different game
tough.
When you're sitting in the – and isn't that the way it is with everything?
Yeah.
I mean, you go to softball practice, then you go to the game, and suddenly there's pressure on you, and it's a different – it's a different thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And, you know, I think I said this in the podcast. I always tried to give whoever wanted to a chance to come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some people took to it, and others it was more difficult.
Sure, sure.
So are you ready for that?
I feel like I am. I mean, I enjoy talking. I love discussions.
You should see Corey's face.
Rolling her eyes and laughing.
No, I just squinched my nose. I just laughed.
But I do, I mean, we, years ago, you know, one of these friends that I mentioned previously, we got in this bad habit. Good for me, bad for family, but we could just talk for hours on end. And Corey finally had to ask me, honey, I love that you have this relationship and I respect it, but there needs to be boundaries where there is home time and then there is Adam time and Adam's group time. And so I just had to say to my friends, and they were totally understanding. Like I said, it was the only one married at the time, but I just said, guys, if you call me between certain hours and I don't answer the phone, it's not because I'm screening your call because I don't want to talk to you. It's that I just cannot talk to you.
So what do you want to do? What do you want to do with the podcast? Maybe I'm fooling myself, but I think I've given you pretty big latitude.
You really have, John. And maybe this is one of my blessings and my curses, but I'm an extremely trusting person, and I take people at their face value. I interact with people and I just size them up. And if I feel positive about someone, I just willingly trust them. That's the world that I want to live in. And so you have given me incredible latitude, but I trust you also, and I trust your judgment that if you don't agree with something that I want to do, you've been doing this for a long time and I'm going to listen to you. But what I think we briefly and just in small quantities discussed what my plans are. But I think your show to date has been about deconstruction. You've done it very well. I can't imagine it being done better. I think what you have done to the point that you brought up about, you know, the Harry Potter character last week, it's been beautifully done to take the sting away from these concepts and these ideas. Take, for example, and I don't think I recall you ever doing this live on air, but the concept of even stating your temple name out loud, and I'm not going to do it right now, but that is an unthinkable act for so many people. And literally that, like, maybe a lightning bolt may come out of the sky and strike them in the head. But at least in my experience, that's never happened to me. And I feel like you've done that on the show, maybe with other concepts, where you take the sting, you take the burn away from these concepts and allow people to look at them like tinker toys and to turn them around, to maybe build a house out of them if they want to, maybe build one of those cool teeter totters where you can flick the pieces and they can go through the sky and hit the ceiling. You can do whatever you want with the pieces. So I want to continue that. I really do. I don't think I can ever fill your shoes in that regard, but I want to try to just at least continue those discussions. I want to continue the philosophy series. I think it's really important to introduce new ideas. We live on a planet that is in a galaxy, that is in a universe, that is infinitely larger as we go down in scale than as we go up in scale. It is so expansive and so huge. Mormonism is so incredibly insignificant, really. It's 14 million people that are self-important, that think that they have the answers to the universe, and I don't believe that. I just think it's incredibly presumptuous and arrogant and maybe just ignorant even. So I want to discuss new ideas and be willing to be wrong and to have somebody come in and set the record straight. And then I'd say the third thing that I want to do is focus on just healthy ways of existing if this is no longer for you. I have no interest in convincing people not to be Mormon. I have no interest in hurting people that are Mormon. If it works for them and they can be respectful with it, not harm others, not legislate in a way that is harmful to others, I have no beef with those people. Just as I don't have any beef with anyone that's Catholic or Jewish or Islamic that is respectful and kind with the tool that they are wielding. But I definitely feel and empathize with the pain of people that are suffering, that are being hurt by that abuse of power, if you will. Religion is power, especially in this area. We all understand it. And it's not just in this area. You go over into the Middle East and it's a power structure there. You go to Italy, where I went on my mission, Catholicism is a power structure there. Judaism is a power structure in New York. So while I don't want to harm anyone within that power structure personally, I do want to continue to help people find healthy ways to move on after they no longer want that in their life.
Well, good. What I like about you is that you come at this from a perspective of honesty and genuine inquiry. And that is going to appear to insiders sometimes as an attack. You know, like the church, as you sort of imply, moves in and out of being a good neighbor to being very draconian with people around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think part of doing this sort of podcast honestly is feeling the freedom, the latitude to be able to call them out.
Yeah.
But not having to. I mean, I think that's always been the strength of Mormon Expression is, I've surprised plenty of people from time to time by saying something they didn't expect me to say.
Certainly.
And I've been called for not keeping to the ex-Mormon script. Fuck the ex-Mormon script. Who cares about that? You know, and to be true to yourself. And, you know, like I've told you, I think one of the things that made it strong was I was willing to make mistakes and change course. And if you listen, I just recently went over the catalog and we tried all sorts of things and some we abandoned, some we kept. And I'd give you the same advice.
Yeah.
Is don't be afraid to try something new and don't be afraid to move on from, you know, something.
Well, thank you. And I really do appreciate that latitude. I feel like it is sincere and I feel like you have a bigger picture in mind and I'm excited about being a part of that. And, maybe my wife would feel differently. I don't feel like, I know I have an ego. Everyone has an ego, but I don't feel like I have a huge ego. I'm perfectly fine being wrong. It just really doesn't hurt my feelings. I like pursuing truth. I like just the process of dialogue and argumentation, but I don't have to be right. Would you agree, honey?
Well, that's what my, I guess, closing statement would be about you is that I want to say unassuming, like you're very honest, but you're willing to admit when you're wrong or just admit that you don't know. But I think a great thing that you can bring to people is you can break things down to what is fair, what you can do about it, and just letting the rest go. And I'm not always awesome about following his advice when he's giving it to me, I guess, when it's, well, that specific thing does not, it matters, but there's nothing you can do about it. And I think that that's something that Adam will be really good at doing is just being able to explain to people like, yeah, that sucks. This, whatever it is lame. And it's really frustrating when, I don't know, you want to bring wine to Thanksgiving and no one wants wine at Thanksgiving. Well, there's no right or wrong there, but it's about being respectful and just letting things go. And that's something that he's really good at breaking down and putting into perspective.
Well, I think I recognized in you a characteristic that I have. Some people misunderstand. I like the debate, and people might misinterpret that as wanting to be right.
Mm-hmm.
I very, very much enjoy hearing the ideas countered back at me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when I hear interesting ideas, oftentimes I don't agree with. I'm fascinated by them. I'm fascinated by the metaphysical and people who, but I will challenge them and I will poke at them because I love hearing that back. Unfortunately, for some people who don't get that, they see it as an arrogant way to try to stifle everybody's opinion.
Yeah,
I enjoy being challenged that same way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like, you know, I like the rules of your group. I don't like the ad hominem. You can say things to hurt me. And I can say things to hurt other people. And that's what we want to avoid. But I very much recognize in you and in the times I've been able to interact with you that, love for that, marketplace of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's key to what we have tried to accomplish here.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So I'm excited. And I think we've said, my plan is to come on monthly and we're going to continue the philosophy series. It's been my favorite part. And, other than that, you're on your own, man.
No pressure. Well, you know what? When I was introduced to construction, I actually got the job through going on splits with the missionaries. And I just was commenting on this guy's house, how beautiful it was, calls me out of the blue and gives me a job. And I told him, I have no experience. I'm not exaggerating either. I've never changed a cover on an outlet even. And he says, I'll teach you everything you need to know. Don't worry. And what a cool guy. I mean, he hired me based on character alone. That was it. See, one of the only times that's ever happened to me in my life. And I owe him greatly. But my first day on the job, I'm thinking I'm going to get training. They're going to take me out. They're going to take me to an OSHA course. I'm going to maybe 3 months under somebody's wing. Drive me out to the job site. It's a 200,000 square foot barrack. We're renovating the entire thing in 45 days while the soldiers are being deployed and a new one's coming back in from the field. So we got to get this thing done. And the person drops me off, pats me on the back and says, go get 'em, Tiger. And that was my training for that job. So while I do feel a bit overwhelmed and I feel nervous to follow in your footsteps and to continue what you've built, I do have a little bit of experience with just trusting that I'm up to the job and just going for it.
Well, excellent. I think you'll do fantastic. And, Corey, any last words?
I don't think so. Go get 'em, Tiger.
And of course, you know, even though I just said I'm not going to interfere, but I'm already going to interfere. You're welcome to come back anytime, right? And
thank you.
And participate.
I sure hope so.
One thing that we did that you can decide whether or not to do is I tried to be as transparent in the podcast. About every 6 months, we would do a sort of a retrospective.
Update, sure.
And it would be fascinating to hear back from you guys in 6 months on how it's affected your life, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm surprised by how little it affects my life, and sometimes I'm surprised by the impact it has.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to watch that. But you've got a bad guy. You can sick him on me. Just always, if there's anything, just always blame it on me.
I'm
okay.
It's the director's fault. it's the great leader's fault.
All right. Well, you guys have been delightful. Thank you so much. And every Tuesday here at, are you going to rename the studio?
No. Well, you know what? It's the house that John built. We're going to keep it the same. We're going to change the song. We're just going to stay with the same format. It's going to be at 7 o'clock on Tuesdays. I hope that everyone will just keep listening and give me a shot. Everyone knows that I'm not John Larson, but I just need a little bit of time to get my legs under me and for people to give me a shot and to hear me out. And I just hope that you keep listening.
Well, and I would offer for the first couple months, I'll be here to give support. And I've always felt bad. I said in the podcast before that I'm in performance mode, so I'm kind of a dick. But now I'm not in performance mode. We can come have a drink in the back of Adam's podcast. So come on out and sit with me in the back and throw a spit wad.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, John.
Heartbreaking by my time.